Hi everybody, I'm Jeff Seckendorf, CEO of UTD. I don't even know the name of my company anymore. It changed. We did that five times.
Is the name changed?
Yeah, it's UTD Scuba Diving now, not Unified Team Diving.
Well, it's UTD Team Diving or UTD Scuba Diving. Or UTD. Yeah.
You gotta have an official name.
It's UTD Scuba Diving.
Okay.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Unified Team Diving podcast. I'm Jeff Seckendorf, CEO of UTD Scuba Diving, here with Ben Voss, Training Director at Unified Team Diving. Hey, Ben.
Hey, everyone. Good to see you also.
It feels like we haven't done this in a long time, but we have. We did one a couple weeks ago. But I don't know. I don't know why either. Maybe we just need to do more.
Yeah, exactly. We kind of promised Jay, right, that we did this more on a more frequent basis. So.
Yeah, we did promise him. And you know how we are about promises, right? Our only promise is that we're not going to make any more promises.
Well, internally, we can promise all we want because we only keep each other accountable.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But this is interesting because now, you know, we're looking at the idea of this, of going back sort of to our roots of how is this thing started back in 2008 with the idea of a thinking diver.
Yeah.
And I don't know, there's like so much to talk about on this thing. We can go forever. So I think we're probably going to do a couple of parts of this, right?
Yeah, I think it lends itself for a three-part series.
I like the idea of a three-part series. Yeah. And then because we can get residuals on the reruns three times instead
exactly.
of once. This is why actors love reruns, right?
I guess so, man.
Yeah, they get the residuals without having to show up. So yeah, so thinking diver, we're gonna explore this on a bunch of different levels. But one of the first things that struck me, and I guess we'll get the cycling thing out of the way right away, right?
Yeah, that's good.
Then we can go ahead and talk about scuba. is the idea that you can't do this alone, and more importantly, you don't have to do this alone. And when I say this, it is your complete scuba diving education and set of experiences. So, you know, there's a phrase that I don't, maybe it's an English colloquial phrase, because you hadn't heard it, but,
no.
You know, the idea that it takes a village, which means you have the opportunity to put a team of people around you to help you accomplish your goals. So, I mean, is there a phrase like this that you would have come up with in it, either in Dutch or Danish or?
I don't think so. There has to be, but usually I'm quite good with an analogy, but I can't really come up with something.
So I was looking at this the other day. I was going to do this as a car cast, but I thought it'd be more fun to do with the two of us. That it takes a village to accomplish your goals. My goals, Ben's goals, Jay's goals, any of our goals in any endeavor, whether it's scuba diving, cycling, triathlon, business, becoming a doctor, becoming a mechanic, becoming a whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it takes a team to help guide you through the process.
Yeah, especially now you mention it, we get the you know, the fitness and the cycling out of the way, in triathlon is a very big thing because that's a very, very individual sport. Like it's you that's doing everything, but it requires, even on an amateur level like myself, it's my family needs to be on par and give me the space to train. You know, I have to have some kind of structure in my plan coming from a coach or from a coaching program. I need, you know, all the other things around you that facilitate your training, like the swimming pool and the club that has the times in the swimming pool, all this stuff. It's just not possible without that village around you to accomplish your individual goals.
That's the infrastructure. That's super important, right? The other piece of it is the actual humans,
yeah,
who work inside that infrastructure. So, you know, for me, obviously it's a coach, but it's a nutritionist, it's a chiropractor, it's a massage therapist, it's the guy who drives the motorcycle that motor paces me, it's, you know, on and on, sports psychologists, again, family who has to be behind it, all these people who create it. So I wanted to look at who are the people that make up your village in scuba diving? Who would that be? So, I mean, let's just start right at the beginning, right? The most obvious start is an instructor, right? I mean, I think that's the clearest place. You walk into a dive shop, you say you want to learn to dive, and the first thing they do is they point you toward an instructor. So how do you decide if that guy's okay or not? Where do you pick that up? I mean, who makes the decision that...
Yeah, who gets to be the mason in your village?
Yeah, who has that guy been teaching diving for 2 weeks or 20 years? And does it, maybe 2 weeks is better?
Yeah, maybe, who knows, yeah.
So how do you choose an instructor when you walk in? What do you think?
Well, I mean, nowadays it shows a bit your age, Jeff. And when you're saying walking, I think most people they log in to their instructors nowadays.
Well, you got to meet somebody. You got to at some point you have to show up.
Exactly. At some point, it has to be face to face. No, I think you're right. I think one of the good things about the dangerous World Wide Web right now is that you can do a lot of your own, how you say, checks. And holding up someone to a standard that you can now set, because it's so hard if you've never tried scuba diving before. That's the hardest choice, right? If you want to become a scuba diver, how do you pick an instructor? How do you pick a course? How do you pick an organization? That's super hard, because on the tin, they almost always say sort of the same thing in your layman's eyes anyway. And then you go and talk to instructor A, and he's the nicest guy you've ever met, and it feels that there's a good, you know, chemistry and everything works. Well, you're gonna pick him. But is he,
or you go to B and it's exactly the same?
Yeah. And then if you're picky, you go for a second opinion, and the B guy is just as friendly and just as, you know, and you never know. So it's hard. And when I in the past used to get that question, is like, how do I do this? It's because which direction do I choose as a diver? I used to say, look at the divers that are diving the dives, that are doing the dives that you want to do. And then when you found those people, look at them that looks like they have the most control and the most fun, follow them. And then for a period of time, block everything else out. Because otherwise, in the beginning, you just get so confused. Right, a little side story. This is some years ago now. We, when I had the dive shop, we had a customer come in for a wing and back plate. She wanted the wing and back plate because she heard good about it, and she came quite a while away, like a 2-hour drive for Denmark. That's quite a bit. That's like halfway across the country, to give a bit of perspective. And we had a long talk, and you know, things clicked, and she had a good understanding and a good feeling with like, okay, this DIR stuff actually makes sense. I want to train like that. Is that possible? Like, she had no idea, right? She was a certified diver, but the club that she was coming from was just a regular dive club with no affiliation to any form and no of standardization whatsoever. So eventually she bought her wing and back plate, and she enrolled in an essentials class. And with long hose and all the things that go with it. And she was one of those divers that are really hard on themselves. You know, it's like, ooh, I'm not so good. And I struggle a little bit with this. What do you mean you struggle? You nailed your back kick on the first dive. I mean, you know, one of those divers, you know them. Everyone knows them. But so she was good, but a little bit insecure. She comes back to the club and calls me up a week later, and she says, Ben, can you help me over the phone with me putting my hoses back on my regulator? I'm like, sure, but why? What happened? It's like, why did you take him off? No, I didn't take him off, because we were on a club dive. And the guy said, like, what are you doing with the long hose? You're not a tech diver, and that's just stupid, and blah, blah, blah. And they took it apart, got kind of like took it out of our hands. and put short hoses on, like, and I'm saying, listen, it is your equipment. Who are they to start tinkering with your equipment? Are they service technicians, first off, to begin with? Did you ask them or pay them to do that? They shouldn't touch your equipment in that way. Anyway, we got it sorted. And then she got like confused. It's like, yeah, but they're saying this and blah, 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 that. And then I had the same talk. Just close your mind. Look at the dives you want to do. Pick the divers that are diving the way you want to dive and shut out everything else until you've got a good grasp of that what you're doing is correct for you, what feels right. And then you can open up again and then you can better judge and compare, so to speak.
Yeah, and I think that works. That goes down to training methodologies also. When you look at us, we have this team methodology, we have, you know, consistent gear, we have, you know, the idea of progressing, you know, at a pace you can manage. We're not ramming anybody through certification, all of that. So part of it is researching the instructor, but it's also researching the methodology that instructor is using to give you the best thing you could possibly get. Look, if you go into a shop and they tell you, yeah, you can become an open water diver. It takes you two evenings and a weekend, and it's €99 or $99, and we're going to get you this certification card, and they start holding up cards to show you what the Holy Grail is. Well, you could put that on one side, or you could say, here's another operation, another organization that says, well, this is a serious thing you're doing. There are some risks involved, and what's the rush? So here you're going to have a 6-day class, 4 pool sessions, 2 full days of diving, some extra classroom sessions, and it's $500 or €500. But, you know, you don't have this holy grail of certification in front of you, but what you have in front of you is education. And I think that's really the key difference. So, you know, the most important thing I think is to find what you're looking for in terms of the consciousness of the people who are going to do your training for you.
That's hard though. As a new diver, it's super hard, because where are you going to go? How many newly certified divers have you had that had a general good experience? And then you ask them, how was your instructor? Oh, the best instructor in the world. That's usually what you hear. What they're saying is the nicest guy in the world. Honestly, they have no frame of reference to actually judge his instructor qualification. He might be breaking 4 standards in their class, or be completely ignorant to the fact that they're destroying the bottom behind them, something, whatever. Or he could be the best instructor in the world. The point I'm trying to make is, without a reference point, they have no idea. They're just judging by the fact that did they have a good time and how is the people. So to create that team, to start building your thinking team, you have to first start think about yourself, I think, and see what do you value, and then see if you can pick apart the person from the instructor.
So let's assume that our hypothetical diver here made the right decision and called up a UTD instructor and found out that there was no instructor in their town. And so, you know, we offer up the coaching program, right? Which is a great way to work in our methodology without actually having to be in the same town as your instructor, because the coaches, they work on, you know, we've been through this on 1,000 podcasts. The coaches work online, they communicate with you daily, the whole deal. So once you've made that commitment, what I look at as a coach, a scuba coach to my scuba clients, right? And remember, this is semantics. Our coaches are instructors. Our instructors are coaches. It's the same thing. Our students, we call them clients when they're in the coaching program, but they're students, you know, also. As a coach with a client, who do I want to bring in to help me build a village for my client? Like, who are the other people? Obviously, the infrastructure that you talked about earlier is important. You know, do you have a pool? Do you have access to a shop, fills, gear, you know, all of that. But who else do I want to bring in to make you the best version of yourself as a scuba diver?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's where I'm really interested in looking today as we talk about this, like, you know, what are the correlates to you know, a fitness program like cycling or triathlon? And, you know, who do we go with, go to say, well, who is part of your team? Who are the people who make it, make you the best version of yourself, right? And I think the first step in that is, who are the people who give you access?
True. Yeah.
Who are the people who own the pool, who own the boat, who own the shop, right? So this is all about relationship building, right? If you need gas, it's so much more fun if you walk into a dive shop with your two tanks and everybody says, "Norm, how's it going?"
Exactly.
You know, and you've got this rapport, this relationship, you know, you're getting good service. You start to build friends and community just in that situation. So I think we start to overlook the people who, and I'm doing air quotes if you can't see me, serve us in scuba diving.
Mm.
Who are the service people who we want as part of our village? The dive shop owner, because that is also going to be the person who can give you deals. The fill technician, who you know you can start to trust to do a good job mixing your gas. You know, who else is in the dive shop? Your repair tech, you know, who may help you do a quick service if something breaks, things like that. So I think that's the first core, is who are the people who help you with the logistics? And it always comes back to, can you build a relationship with each person involved in that scenario? If there's multiple dive shops because you're in a situation where you need, you know, the shop on this side of town, the shop, whatever it happens to be, you know, you might have a recreational shop who can get you air fills, there's, you know, a minute from your house, but they don't have any equipment that supports your kind of diving, be it DIR or tech or whatever. So you may have two shops where you're doing this. You know, I have bike shops like this. I got a bike shop down the street I can throw a stick at. So if I need a tube, I run down there. If I need something complex, then I have to go drive a half an hour.
Exactly. And I think this is, you're building up a little Rolodex, you know, for keeping it to the older public.
Wait. Weren't you just talking about me walking in, being older?
Sorry.
Now you're talking about a Rolodex?
I used to have one that you can turn on the sides. Yeah. Like it's flipped.
Yeah, with the flip.
Amazing.
Yeah. Okay. So you're not as young as you look.
No, I hide it pretty well. No, but that's true, right? You have to build it up. And the longer you're in it and the more you demand of what you want to get out of scuba diving, the bigger the Rolodex becomes.
It's almost like rings, right? You're in the middle. And then, you know, your instructor's in the next ring, and then your infrastructure support, the dive center, the fill people, the maintenance guys are the next ring. I think the next ring is your village of people you dive with.
Yeah.
And that village is also really important, because now you're talking about, who do I go on fun dives with? Who do I go and practice skills with? Who will go in a cave with me? Who will, you know, step up and do a class when I want to go take, you know, my next class and I want a buddy, you know, who is part? So that is probably of all the part of the village that you're building around you as a scuba diver. I think that group of people you dive with is probably one of the most important. Now, your friend who dove in the club, those are not her peeps.
No, some, in fact, funnily enough, some of them from the club have now converted to be her peeps.
I love that, right?
So that's great, because they could see that. I mean, she's a strong person, even though she was insecure in her ability of holding her ground when it comes to scuba, because she was so new into scuba. But in all other aspects of her life, she's successful, and now it is translated that she can use that, you know, security, self-confidence. In scuba diving, they see, okay, wait a minute, this girl can dive, you know? And then she converted some of them.
Right. And, you know, when you look at that, it's like, what is diving, right? And I think this is the place where this picking the team becomes so important, because diving is not putting the equipment together and going underwater with it. Diving is what you do to your body when you're underwater wearing the equipment.
Mm.
Are you able to be horizontal in the water? Are you able to be neutral? Can you control your stops? Can you control your movements? Can you control the silt that you're not silting up? Can you maintain your awareness? This whole idea of team diving, you know, really, you could call it village diving.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it is your village, your team. And I dive, you know, when I look at the people I dive with, you know, I mean, down the street here, I have Kim, who, you know, will go to Mexico with me, you know, and dive in caves. And then, you know, I've got my wife who loves, you know, 85 degree water, you know, what is that, 30 degree water, and pretty fish and lovely reefs and, you know, 40 foot 12 meters. That's, and that is a part of my diving village, because it's one of the most fun things. We get to share this, we get to travel together. You know, we have these experiences diving, but, you know, she won't go in a cave. You know, she won't go to 200 feet, 60 meters. So I have parts of the village that do parts of things.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, I think, with everything. Yeah.
You know, same thing on a bike. I have my track buddies. You know, tomorrow I'm doing a motor pacing session with one of my track buddies who's got an e-bike, and, you know, and then, you know, yesterday, you know, Sherry and I went and did just a really lovely little recovery ride together. So they're different parts of the same thing. You're in the middle. The infrastructure that gets you the stuff to go diving with is next. And then there's this team that you create around you.
Yeah, which is, yeah, potentially a bigger ring.
Yeah, or with different uniforms. Yeah. Different.
Or multiple rings of the same
different,
thing.
Different,
yeah, exactly.
Different.
No, I think that's right. And it's... It also ties a little bit in with the question sometimes you get is like, how do I dive as a UTD diver that now has so many things being brought into the light that they haven't previously thought of? Like, you know, ratio deco or rock bottom gas calculation, or linking your bottom time to your deco time and then making it come full circle with the gases you have available, all that sort of stuff that we'll talk on the thinking diver part two, I think. Is important. And how do you dive with someone who hasn't been shown those details or those delicacies? And that's just a different ring.
I think the first question I always get from new people to the system recreationally are, my buddy does a 15 foot stop and I do a 20 and a 10 foot stop.
Hmm.
So my buddy is either 5 feet, 2.5 meters above me, or 5 feet, 2.5 meters below me. Is that okay? Is that team diving? What do we do with that?
Well, it's funny. I get the question a lot as well. And it's like, in general, what would you do? This is also what I always ask back. It's like, what would you do if you have two different computers?
Yeah.
And one computer wants you to stop at 20 feet for 1 minute. And then the safety stop, so to speak, you know, between 5 and 3 meters at 15 feet. And then the other computer says one stop at 10 feet again. How do you do that? Well, you always go with the most conservative computer. And in their frame of mind and thinking, that's the one that makes the first recommendation for a stop, regardless of what it is. It's the same thing. Just do that. If you have to sit with him for 3 minutes at 15, he can sit with you for 1 minute at 20.
At 20. And the reality is 20, 15, 10, right?
You can still shake hands.
6.54, it doesn't really, well, it doesn't affect your deco.
No,
I think that's the other thing. It doesn't affect your deco. But it is an interesting topic of conversation, because when people are new to the system, they're very serious about the stops. 30, 20, 10, right? 9.63. And you can't waver from that. You know, you were trained to pin your stops. You pin your stops. So, you know, I think part of this whole village thing, part of the whole team thing is, let's have a little chat before we go diving. You know, what are you going to do when you come up? How are you going to make it work? I like to do this. You like to do this. Can we compromise, figure out something that serves us both? But again, when you look at this as part of your village, which part of the village is this? Which team are you with? Because you know, if I'm diving with a bunch of people who are recreationally trained, they want to do a 15-foot stop. Yeah. I don't care a whit, you know. That just means I'm going to go really slowly all the way up through the 20, you know, pretend to take a minute there and make my way to 15 feet. And then there we are.
Exactly. I just made a note actually to touch on that on the next podcast.
Yeah.
Good. On that, because this is such a critical point that.
It's such a critical thing. And the longer you dive, the less important it is from a strictly decompression safety stop standpoint. But the more important it is for working within the team, especially if the team is not trained the same way you are.
Yeah, it really is a good point for thinking diver versus protocol.
So that's an interesting piece of it. And then, you know, of course, on the other side of it is when you have your buddies for your more advanced dives, be it, you know, deeper recreational or tech or cave or whatever it is, generally those people, that part of your team, your village, has come through the same training system you have. And again, you know, so we train a very specific unified team diving protocol, but there are other agencies that train in similar fashion that we know about, right? All these other agencies have training systems that, you know, are similar in some ways. And, you know, all you have to do is have a quick conversation with that group and jump in and say, how do you do your, you know, what are you going to do on your ascent? Well, I'm going to do A, B, C, and D. And I'm going to do B, C, D, and E. And it's like, okay, cool. Let's, like you said, let's take the conservative one for this dive. Let's all do this. And everybody says, okay, and you go for the dive.
Exactly. It's not more hocus pocus than it needs to be.
It should just be easy, not something to focus on to the point where you stop having fun.
No, exactly. Exactly. I think that's a good point you're making. Because that's usually what ends up happening.
It gets so serious.
Oh, my God.
Right? Yeah. It's like, now we're going to, you know, operate on somebody's brain.
You no, seriously not. Want 1 minute at 40 feet before we go to 30 feet? Oh, my. Don't you know deep stops will kill you?
So, yeah. So that whole thing, you know, is part of it. And then I think there's the non-diving part of the village. And this is the stuff that I also think is really important. Who helps you with fitness? Because I've said this 1,000 times on this podcast. Most of the diving injuries that I've seen in my decades of diving come not in the water, but from moving gear.
Hands down.
And the worst of them are trying to wear doubles and get in a Zodiac.
Yeah.
I've seen more back injuries in that scenario than anything else, right? So functional fitness becomes a really important thing. Can you create your own functional fitness on your own, or do you need some help?
Yeah.
You know, so that's the first thing. Do you need a trainer? Nutrition, you know, can you eat well enough that your body is functioning in its best possible way? And nutrition and hydration on diving are important because you dehydrate, you know, you're burning through calories to stay warm, all this other stuff. And so, you know, you could come up with any number of plans. I've had great experiences working with nutritionists for short periods of time. It's like I get a blast of information, then I spend a year or two utilizing it.
Yeah.
And it's the coolest thing. What I'm down to now, and this is how I'm helping my 12-year-old grandson eat, is try never to eat anything you can't pronounce.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. If you look at the box and you look at the bottle and you can't pronounce half the stuff that's in it, chances are you don't want to be eating it. Yeah.
You shouldn't eat it. Yeah.
So it's that. It's, you know, are you anxious? Are you nervous? Are you, you know, something that, you know, some meditation can help you with, or, you know, just, you know, a general chat about well-being can help you with someone, professional or not.
Breathing,
you know,
technique.
What do you need to get your head? Yeah, all of it. What do you need to do to get your head on straight for a dive? So, you know, you've got you in the middle, then you've got your infrastructure, then you've got your instructor, then you've got your team, then you have this additional support that basically supports your body and your mind And I don't think we can overlook that. I mean, I was setting up a new coaching client this morning, you know, and we're just starting to get into what do you need for fitness? What do you eat? How's your weight? Are you comfortable with the way your body looks when you look in the mirror? And can we help you with this? You know, and, you know, normally the answer is yes.
Exactly. And it's down to do with the trust you place in the person also that's helping you out, right? I mean, thing not to look over in that regard is also the family, because diving is an activity that usually takes up a whole day for, you know, 2 times 30 minutes under the water. So you have to take that into account. The people you're spending the whole day with, do you actually like that being around with them other than also being under the water with them? and are you, you know, are you appreciating the fact that you can take a day out of your calendar and enjoy these activities? That's one thing.
I think the other thing is, because I can't do a podcast without talking about the coaching program, one of the things that a coach does in the UTD coaching program is help you create this village. I mean, that coach is at the center. That coach may or may not be your in-water instructor, but the coach is your guide. The coach is the person who's saying, okay, now your job is to go find this piece of your village. Go find somebody, or here's a friend who I have who can help you with this. Or here's someone you can talk to about this. Or, you know, you have a question about this rebreather, call Ben. You have a question about, you know, diving in, you know, in Maryland, call Tanya. You want to know about diving off the coast of California up in Ventura or net diving, call Kim. I mean, it's like, we know so many people after all these years that resource is amazing to help you build this village. And I think that it doesn't have to be intimidating and you don't have to do it alone. So when we say it takes a village, you don't have to go it alone, we're also saying it takes a village, you don't have to build it alone. We'll actually build it with you.
Yeah, exactly. You'll become part of someone else's village, probably.
Exactly. At the same time. At the same time. So, I don't know. I just think it's interesting. You know, I don't think this is an earth-changing, world-changing topic to talk about.
No, and I think a lot of people have it that way. It's just nice to shine a light on it sometimes.
Yeah, and just look around and be grateful that I've got, you know, this team and that team and this instructor and this coach, and, you know, they're all for me. You know, it's this whole thing. It's the podcast. It's the CarCast I just did, right? We're not for everybody. And now I'm, you know, the title seems negative, but the topic wasn't. But now I'm turning it around and saying, well, who are we for? Right. And really, you know, I haven't recorded it yet, but when you listen to it in a few weeks, what you're going to learn is we're for the people who want a village.
Yeah.
That is the key to it.
Yeah.
We're for the people who want community, who want a village, who, you know, want to share this and be shared with it. And I think that's important.
Yeah, I think so too. So I think, well, it's going to be interesting to see if we can open the minds of some people with the next two episodes on the whole thinking diver concept, because it starts with that. It's like thinking about where you want to go as a diver and trying to see if you can find some way to not have to start all over again every time you change direction in scuba diving. So it's important to be critical at the beginning. And then when you find something, stick with it for a while until you get comfortable in that scenario. And then you can evaluate. Then you have a broader thing if the village that you're living in is great or if you want to move.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And then just get the truck and go.
Basically. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So part two is going to be the sort of the logistics of what it is to be a thinking diver, right?
Yeah.
Planning, equipment, you know, managing the team and things like that. And then part three,
the practicalities of it.
Yeah. Part three.
I think that's where we like put it into practice. Like, how do you then become a thinking diver? It's like, okay, part two, we'll discuss what do we actually think about when it comes to gas planning, deco planning, and relations to that. And not just what kind of, you know, gradient factors you should put into your computer. No, I'm talking about what about the thinking when to defer from one set of protocols to another set of protocols, or when to break trim, for example, or like we just talked about, when you dive with people from another background, how do you handle that, but still don't want to, you know, give up on your beliefs? That's what we'll cover in part two.
Yeah. And then three is cool. Three kind of wraps it, right? Puts a bow on it. So that'll be...
How do you go about getting those skills to be able to think for yourself
within
your village? Yeah,
within your village and think for yourself. James and his podcast recently talked about The Last Dive, the book, The Last Dive.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I heard those. Yeah.
So I reread it this past week. And man, there is so much in that book about solo diving.
Oh,
and so many dead people who are on the pointy end of solo diving. Mm. That it's just like, you know, if that doesn't push you toward creating a village and creating a team, especially in the water, nothing will.
Exactly. And the thing is, though, those were the pioneers of the sport in many ways, right? I mean, you know, mixed gases were starting to come out, and you know, there was a lot of stuff that was unknown, like about decompression, about all this sort of stuff. So I think it's fascinating to read those books, The Last Dive, Deep Descent, all those from that area, from that era.
I mean, they were pioneers, but they pioneered past where other pioneers were finding better systems.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. So they kept, a lot of those guys just kept on their own thing, on deep air and on crappy deco and on endless decompression when they're freezing. And
exactly.
It was a terrifying book. Not a terrifying book. Lots of talk about getting bent in the worst possible ways.
Yeah, true.
All right. So, but on a happier note, we'll pick this up on part two.
Yes.
And then part three. And, you know, watch for, you know, future cool stuff coming up. We have IDCs that are starting to pop up, and classes coming everywhere. It's getting into spring here. It's an amazing, beautiful day. It's like, you know, 70 degrees, 25 Celsius, and just not a cloud in the sky, and just spectacularly beautiful. So spring is springing.
I was hopeful here. Spring is like calendar wise is supposed to come back, and it was like creeping towards the double digits in centigrade, and now it's just gone way down again. It's like 2 degrees outside right now. I tell you, I was out for a run this morning, and I came up, and there was like frost on my shoulders. Yeah, ridiculous. I'm moving to California. That's it. Yeah.
All right, everybody. So leave us a rating and review. You can find this podcast everywhere, and shoot us a note if you have questions or topics you'd like us to cover. We'll have an obscure questions podcast coming up at some point. It's info@utdscubadiving.com. Goes to both Jeff and Ben. Here I am talking about myself in the third person, me and Ben. All right.
Cool.
Well, good. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Inside. Hell is going outside.